Blog Talk Radio.
What's good, bro?
Hold on.
Yo.
What's good, bro?
Yo, what's good? How you feeling?
Another day, man.
Yep. Okay.
How you doing today?
Yep, doing good. All right, so we got the rundown.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start off with Mark, then go Dame, light touch Harden, then go Knicks, Nets, and finish with Dr. J.
Got it.
See if Tommy jumps in here. Tommy, hear you. Is that me or you? Oh, that was me. Okay. Duplicate.
So it looks like we're gonna have to do the DiVincenzo the following weekend, not this weekend.
Yeah. I'm trying to think the best way to do it. Like, do we need it like a dedicated show and panel? I'm not so sure. Let me think about that. Even if it's going to get pushed up a week, let me just try to figure it out.
Okay. Time's at 12:20. He's probably gonna come on at 12:30. Ready to roll. Just waiting on him. Let's see what else. Thank you.
Okay.
Have you spoken to Frank before working at Sirius?
I just at Summer League.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. Check, check. We got Frank?
I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Good, good. Yeah, man. Yeah. How's everything?
Good. Oh, hang on. Let me get the video here.
Okay.
A pain in the ass, this thing. Too dark? All right.
There he is.
Right here.
Morning, morning. How you feeling, Frank? Or
what's up? What's
right,
up?
Man?
How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Good. How you doing, Frank?
All right.
Frank's my partner, Alex, here.
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Where are you guys, on Long Island? Strong Island.
Boston. He's Boston Strong up there. I'm out on Long Island, though, man. I'm still holding it down, you know?
Born and raised in New York. Get out of here. He forgets to add that part. Born and raised in New York for over 25 years. Moved out here for a job in school.
Where are you in Boston right now?
I'm in the city itself.
Oh, nice.
So I live in JP, the neighborhood, Jamaica Plain.
Yeah.
So not too far from TD Garden. Takes about a 25-minute subway ride.
Yeah. I like it up in Boston. Yeah. I always stay at that Renaissance by the waterfront. You know, like that area is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I stay there. It's nice. It's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice area. It's nice and quiet, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing how much it got built up over the last, like, 10. Like, when the Celtics were in the finals against the Lakers, that's when it was just starting to come up, and I stayed there. And now you look at it, it's amazing what goes on over there. A lot of young people. It's a pretty cool neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my wife is born and raised in the city, and even she's, like, impressed with how much it's built up because she's, like, she goes out to the seaport. She's like, that place used to be a dump.
Yeah.
No one would go over there and hang out. Now you go over there, you go to the bowling alley, you can go get some nice food and whatnot.
They got that cool beer garden over there, people hanging out.
Okay, should be good to go.
What's that?
Yeah, Frank, we had Scal on Friday, man. Had a good show with
Scal.
Oh,
you did?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked Celtics off-season review.
Was he home? Was he in Orlando? Or
he called
in.
He didn't do video. He said, I can't do Zoom. I said, all right.
He was at an AAU tournament in Orlando with his daughter.
Yeah, so I figured. But it seems like he called in, you know, as soon as he touched back. So that was nice of him. All right.
He's hard to get a hold of. I give you guys credit. I mean, I do a show with him. I can't get a hold of him. He gave me his wife's. He finally just said, text my wife.
Yeah, yeah.
So now that's become a running bit, how I'm always texting his wife.
Right.
Then I tell him that she's texting me in the middle of the night, asking me what's up, how am I doing?
Oh, man.
That's funny.
All right. We should be good to go. All right. Al, just give me some audio levels real quick.
Mic check, mic check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Frank? Oh, Frank, you checking in on another device?
No, you can't hear me?
No, I can't hear you. It says, I see somebody trying to check in Casey's Otter Pilot. Is that me? Is that you, Al? Otter Pilot. I don't even know what that is. I think somebody's trying to infiltrate the live stream here, the Zoom.
Mm. All I know is that I tried to text somebody today. And there was a conversation on there that hadn't been sent. It was a conversation I was having with somebody yesterday that somehow ended up in my text message. And like, I looked at it and like, thank God I didn't say anything crazy.
Yeah,
that's like,
wires
phones,
crossed,
I hate these goddamn phones.
Yeah, man. Likewise, man.
The thing's going to eventually get me fired.
All right.
Especially with all the scammers now today.
Yeah.
Trying to get you. It is crazy.
Yeah, I get a million robocalls a day, man. I haven't cleared my voicemail in about 5 years. I just send everything to voicemail. I don't even check.
Yeah, it's probably the smart thing to do.
Okay. All right. Get my theme music here, ready? It's Chuck D's birthday today. Matter of fact,
it is?
Just texted him. Yeah. Chuck's a big, big supporter of our show, man, on Knicks Fan TV, man. So
We had him in studio once.
Yeah.
He was there with a bunch of guys. It was like before they were about to go on tour.
Okay.
And they stopped in.
Yeah. Yeah. He reps Chuck. I think Chuck listens to between Knicks Fan TV and Sirius. I think that's the only two things he listens to on a daily basis.
I think you're right.
From morning to night, man. So, yeah, that's my guy, man. All right. Let's start it up here. Okay. Manage this. Boom. Okay. Almost there. Okay. All right, here we go. Salute to NBA Nation on this Tuesday afternoon. Another edition of the NBA Report. Keeping the franchise, Alex Chitaris on the ones and twos on today's show. Mark Jackson out of there. Doris Burke, Doc Rivers in for the ESPN main NBA announce team, man. We're going to react to that. Plus, more Damian Lillard news, more Dame saga. When will it end? We're going to touch on that. And the NBA sending a message to Dame and his camp and what all that means. Also, Dr. J taking shots at KD and the NBA with his top 10 list. Al, we got to touch on that as well with special guest. He's all over the map, man. He's everywhere. You can catch him on the starting lineup on NBA Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 86. You can catch him on ESPN, a number of shows, wears many a hat. You can catch him on YES Network, covering the Brooklyn Nets. used to cover the New York Knicks as well. Frank Isola in the building. So let's get into it, man. Hit that like button, hit the share button, and hit the subscribe button. NBA Reports, live and direct. Here we go. All right, man. Frank, welcome to the show, man. I was telling you backstage, we just had Scal on Friday. So welcome to the show today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think when you introduced me, I could have sworn I heard booze somewhere. So it must be some of your loyal followers.
Yeah. Frank, also known as the number one Nick hater. We're going to get to that later.
That's not true.
But either way, man, happy to have you on and
thanks for having me.
And going around the league. And first and foremost, let's talk Mark Jackson, man. Mark Jackson being the last selection of ESPN cleaning house there. Jeff Van Gundy was announced that that he was going to be removed from the broadcasting team, the main broadcasting team. And now Mark Jackson is also not only leaving the broadcasting team, but leaving ESPN with Doris Burke and Doc Rivers filling into that slot, man. What was your reaction when the news broke there?
I think once the news about Jeff Van Gundy broke, which was, what was that, June 30th?
Yeah.
I was wondering what might happen to Mark. You know, he and Jeff have known each other, I think, since the late 80s when Jeff came in as an assistant coach on the Knicks, and he and Mark were always really close. You know, Jeff brought Mark back to the Knicks. Then when Jeff was in Houston, I think he essentially brought Mark out of retirement. So that's why they had such good chemistry during the broadcast, because they had, you know, had a 30-year relationship. If you're around the two of them, and I know both of them really well, all they do is bust balls. So like it's a perfect scenario for the two of them to be together. And you know, my only thing is, you know, I thought they were very good. And I think on the broadcast, when you heard, you know, maybe they might be critical of the officiating once in a while, critical of a player or a fan or a franchise. I think most NBA fans kind of get that. And even if you disagree with it, I don't think people were thinking, I got to turn these guys off. I can't listen to this anymore. I know I wasn't like that. I found them entertaining.
Yeah.
The fact that both of them had coached, Mark's different. Mark was a player, then a coach. I kind of like the, you know, I kind of like the way the coaches look at a lot of stuff. And clearly they'll get that with Doc Rivers, and Doris Burke obviously knows her stuff as well. But I'm going to miss those two guys on the air, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, Al, I love the banter, the back and forth between those guys. I think they were the perfect contrast to Breen, who does a tremendous job. But, you know, Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, they bring a little bit more levity to the broadcast. I actually didn't mind them going at the officials, because a lot of times I agreed, especially when Van Gundy would call them out. Now, supposedly the league didn't like that. Not so sure if that was, you know, part of the reason for them to have him removed. But to me, ESPN is dropping the ball here. I mean, this is your best bet for your basketball property. The pregame show, the halftime show, the postgame show, no offense to those guys, all hard workers, but they can't see TNT when it comes to that. I mean, look, Doris and Mark and Doc will do a good job, I'm sure, but I thought they dropped the ball here, man.
Yeah, when I think about those three, Breen, when I think about Mark Jackson, Van Gundy, even though it was a duo, like I go back to like Abbott and Costello, right? The trio of them, like you have like a straight man, then you have your wise guys, right? And that's what Mark Jackson and Van Gundy were. They were the wise guys, but they knew their stuff and they knew how to like make it fun and enjoyable throughout any broadcast. And I think what Frank touched on is that chemistry, that natural organic chemistry that we're going to miss out on. That's why you tuned in, because they were joking with each other and then Mike, you know, jump in from time to time. And that's something that we're going to miss, especially when you have Doris Burke, Doc Rivers, and Mike Breen. That just seems a lot of, I don't see where the funny's going to come in that wants to make me just like turn up the volume, say, oh, what are they real? Like, of course I'm going to enjoy the analysis. Right. But it's going to be a little, for me, it seems like from the get go, a little too straight laced and not more relaxed as what we got with Mark Jackson and Van Gundy. So it's, you know, it's tough to see them go, but at the same time, I think for ESPN, you have someone like Doris Burke and you're thinking, how do we keep her around too? Right. Because she's liked by other NBA like aficionados. So for someone like her, how do you keep her around? So maybe giving her that promotion. And then you think like maybe ESPN's thinking about how do we get new blood in here at the lower level? So that's probably where they're looking at too, when they're thinking about, hey, let's move on from Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. Even though it hurts, I think that's another business decision that they got to make.
And remember something too, Mike Breen is very close.
Yeah.
He's known Doris Burke for 20 years. He and Doc Rivers have known each other. When was Doc first on the Knicks? Was that 93 or 94 or 92, whenever that was. So Mike Breen, I mean, they've gone golfing over in Europe together.
Mm.
So there will be some chemistry there. But to your point, and I think you know, you mentioned TNT, and it's interesting because I think Jeff and Mark could be critical. They do it in a funny way. And I'm not saying that they're Charles Barkley, but Charles Barkley essentially does the same thing.
Yeah.
Like I always say, you cannot tell me when the league people are watching TNT during a playoff game and Charles is like, ah, game is terrible. I was watching the hockey game. I can't imagine they're thinking, I'm so glad he said that. But the people at home, like, we're all still going to watch the game, but we're all sitting there going, yeah, you know, he's right. This game hasn't been good. This game needs to get a lot better in the second half. And I think a lot of people appreciate the honesty without getting nasty. And I think today's players, and I think Barkley, the thing about Charles Barkley is I think he's always kind of poked the players, but I think now because of social media, maybe the players are a little bit more sensitive. They go back at Charles, which let's face it, when that happens, that only helps TNT.
Right.
It only helps Charles Barkley that he's poking these guys that they go back at him.
Yeah, I like that, man. And that's why I think where ESPN kind of missed it here is because fans, especially nowadays, they appreciate the honesty and the authenticity of the coverage. And let me know what you think about this, Frank, because you are ESPN here. But for, yes, they want to switch it up, and maybe Breen had a hand in having Rivers cover Jackson or Van Gundy because of their relationship. The game will speak for itself. Breen is still going to do a tremendous job. But with ESPN kind of shifting and doubling down on McAfee and his team, trying to tap in with that younger audience. Jimmy Pitaro was going on an interview saying they want to get younger. They want to cater to that younger audience. Doris Burke is great. She's paid her dues since 91. She's been covering the game. But I think instead of Rivers, they should have went with J.J. Redick. Someone who he's new media. He's tapped in with the younger generation. He speaks to the players. One of the few people that actually is, you know, going in with these players on pretty much a weekly basis on his show, has that energy with the younger audience, can do that McAfee type alternate broadcast that they're looking for. To me, they should have slotted in Redick as they kind of shift towards the future here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the one thing with Doc, again, he does have a relationship with Mike, and maybe with J.J. Redick, they're thinking it's eventually going to be either his job or maybe Richard Jefferson's job. Let them get more regular reps on the other broadcast, and then eventually they could slot into that position, because we all know Doc did it once before at TNT, where he was very good. I think he might have maybe originally started at he went to ESPN afterwards. You know, the one thing is, you know, we keep mentioning Barkley and the coverage. We also have to be fair about it. You know, ESPN does a pregame show. They don't do a postgame show. And I know this from doing, you know, the Yes Network. You have a lot more fun, and there's a lot stronger opinions on the postgame show because you're reacting to what's happening as opposed to just previewing stuff. And a lot of people, I would love to know what the ratings are for pregame as opposed to postgame, because when something crazy happens in the game, a guy gets 50 points or there's a controversial ending or somebody didn't play, A, you want to hear the coach talk about it. You want to hear the player. And then you want to hear the analyst respond to it. So really the genius of the TNT show is that they have the post game. ESPN afterwards goes right to SportsCenter. Now they're going to do some of that stuff. They're still going to give you the sense of the live coverage, but it allows, you know, Ernie Johnson with Shaq Kenny and Charles to kind of sit around and pick everybody apart and talk about what the players are saying. I know this from covering, you know, being a newspaper person, when I covered the Knicks, I love like reporting after the game and doing the TV stuff. I like after the game. That's like to kind of talk about some of the big moments in the games, things that happened, analyze what the people said, react to what they said. It's much better than doing preview stuff because a lot of that, not that it's guesswork, it's just, you know, I always feel like you're just doing it to hold space. It's really, you're just waiting for the game to start.
And I think the other thing too, like when you watch ESPN is like, you know, when you have like even Stephen A. Smith and everybody else, like they're giving their take and it's moving on, like with the TNT broadcast. And that's why I also liked Breen, Van Gundy and Jackson, is that there was more of a conversation behind it instead of, okay, it's my take. After that, it's your take. After that, it's your take. And I kind of like that camaraderie where it seems like everyone actually enjoys each other's company rather than just like, here's my take. Let's keep it pushing.
Yeah. And I think too, and I've said this to Jeff before, what I also appreciated about them during the broadcast, they didn't feel the need to talk after every basket or every play. There was a lot of times when they would lay out, and even Mike Breen would lay out, and you kind of let the game breathe a little bit. And I think that's probably hard for a lot. You know, I've only done a few games on TV or radio. I mean, I know it's hard, but there is something to be said for being quiet every once in a while. When there's just a regular play that happens, you don't need to break it down like you're splitting the atom. You know, you are talking for the most part to educated fans. that kind of understand that. After a while, it almost sounds like you're talking down to them when you feel you need to explain every little thing that's happening. And I always thought that was good about those guys. They kind of stayed quiet at times.
Yeah, and I did. You know, Breen came on the show about the halfway mark of the last season, and I talked about that. I asked him about kind of that art of kind of just letting it breathe as opposed to speaking over certain scenarios. And he spoke on the fact that kind of just came with that experience. And so their relationship, their experience doing it together, I think weren't they the longest running team covering the finals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've broken the record. And you know what the funny thing was, when you think about it, what kept them there together was it was odd. Neither of them could get a job.
They
were up for jobs.
Right.
I think the fact, you know, but it's funny, right? The fact that they were so outspoken, now that's not the case in every job that they didn't get, but you wonder how the owner and in particular the GM felt about that, because you had two strong-willed, opinionated guys, and not every general manager and every owner. Jeff always says that. You hear Eric Spoelstra talk about it with players in the Heat. We're not for everybody.
Yeah.
And I think there are certain coaches. I think Mark would say the same thing. I think Jeff would say the same thing. Like, maybe I'm not for everybody. So what kept them probably away from coaching now some people think, well, they were so critical that might have cost them the job. I always think it's a combination of things. It's like when a coach gets fired. It's never one thing. It's usually a series of little things added up, and then everyone says, all right, maybe it's time to move on now.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because now there's been so much rumors about Van Gundy wanting to jump back into coaching. It's been said that Dallas has been hot after him to join Jason Kidd's staff. What do you think happens to these guys? Do they go to TNT? Do they ultimately jump into coaching? You know, Mark Jackson did an interview for the Kings job, the Cavs job. What do you think happens with those guys?
Yeah, I would, you know, the fact that they are, we should all be in a situation where we're getting paid for 2 years not to work. And I know they want to work, but it's probably a pretty nice thing knowing you could take it easy for at least a year. I would think if they don't get back in the media, I could see some kind of coaching job. You know, the one thing about, you know, Mark was going on a lot of head coaching interviews. Jeff had a couple over, say, the last 5 to 10 years. But Jeff proved that he wanted to coach. He was coaching. I mean, here's a guy that coached the New York Knicks in the NBA Finals. He was coaching the qualifying team.
USA,
that, he was getting G League players together just to qualify for the FIBA World Cup, which eventually leads to the Olympics. So, like, he was demonstrating to people that he was serious about coaching, that he was willing to join USA Basketball and coach just the qualifying team, where you never get the current NBA players. You know, then Greg Popovich gets to walk in there and say, all right, LeBron, pass the ball to Kevin Durant, and then you pass the ball to Carmelo.
Steph Curry.
Right? You know, you do that, and then I think we'll be good. I think I'm going to draw up a good play. You know, Jeff's trying to win with G League guys and guys that are out of the NBA, for crying out loud.
No question about it, man. And once again, we're talking to Frank Isola, covers the NBA for a number of properties, including SiriusXM, Channel 86 on NBA Radio, the starting lineup with Ian, Brian Scalabrine, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time, also covers the Brooklyn Nets for the YES Network, and also covers a number of shows for ESPN. And, just interesting to see the changing of the guard. You know, a lot of people are always resistant to change. I'm sure they'll do well. I just felt like, you know, maybe JJ assumes that that role eventually, because I just feel like with these networks now struggling to tap into Gen Z's, you know, consumption here, all these kids are, you know, their attention span is dwindling. They're going to TikTok. They're going to House of Highlights. They're very, you know, short term with it. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do.
I'll give you two quick stories about Mark. Mark was going to play a high school, but this is years ago. I'm a young kid. I hear that Bishop Lachlan's coming to my high school to play, and I had heard about Mark Jackson. I go to the game, and he's not playing. I don't know if he was sick that day. It was only a scrimmage. And Luke Carnesecca was in the gym that day. So I still give Mark a hard time. I say, you really are the grandfather of load management. You actually load manage out of a high school scrimmage game. Then years later, this was the year that the Knicks lost to Toronto, which, of course, is a pretty big moment, because then they don't win a playoff series, I don't think, until the Carmelo-Mike Woodson game. So the Knicks are going to – that week, that's when they used to have – the schedule was wacky. That was best 3 out of 5. But the Daily News back then, we used to do a special section before every playoff round. And the next playoff round, if they won, they were going to play Philadelphia. So I was given an assignment. They said, you got to come up with some stories. So remember, the Knicks were up 2-1 in that series. They lose game 4 at Toronto. Then they end up losing game 5 at the Garden, and they're done. But during that week, I convinced Rick Brunson to let me follow him around for a day after practice. Believe me, times have changed. Nick Stoutwood, if you asked to hang around with a player for a day, you'd be tackled on the streets. So Rick was, he and I always got along really well. And I was fascinated by the fact that Rick hung around with Marcus Camby and Latrell, who were kind of like, not the outcasts, they were more like the rebels on the team. But he also was very close to guys like Patrick Ewing and to Larry Johnson, the older guys. So he somehow connected. But really the story was, how does a guy like this who's never had a guaranteed contract hang on in the NBA for all these years?
Yeah.
So he said after practice one day, he said, I'm going to go into the city with Mark and this and Mark's brother, the Escalade, Troy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, God rest his soul. Yeah, he was a great guy. And Mark's brother-in-law was there too. Mm. We go into the city. And they're going to like different clothing places, I don't know, just to buy T-shirts and stuff. When I tell you that these guys, nothing was off limits when it came to killing each other. I was laughing so hard, I was crying. And I remember thinking, this story is going to be so good. And then the darn New York Knicks had to lose to Toronto. And this story never, that was going to be, plus Rick having played at Temple, it did have a bit of a Philadelphia tie.
Yeah,
it had the
yeah.
whole thing mm-hmm. going. And then
all fell apart. All fell apart, man. Absolutely incredible, man. Shout out to them. Jalen got married over the weekend, so shout out to the Brunson clan as well.
Yep.
Salute to everybody in the chat, man. We're just talking about the Rhyme Animal, Chuck D. It is the Rhyme Animal's birthday today, so everybody in the chat, just wish a happy birthday to Chuck D. Throw a hashtag PE in the chat and salute the legend, Chuck D, man. Salute to Chuck, man. Big-time supporter of the show and big-time supporter of SiriusXM, NBA Radio, man. So.
Right.
Great job. Okay, next story, fellas, man. The Dame saga continues. When will it end? Over the weekend, the NBA sent a memo and sent a message to Dame and his agent, Aaron Goodwin, saying, hey, listen, anybody trying to dictate trades to where you want to go, you will be facing fines, so on and so forth. I mean, I thought that Dame and his agent – They really messed things up, man. They got Dame looking crazy out here, Frank. And I'm not so sure if it was the Miami or bust, but I think it was the I'm not going to play for you that may have got this memo in the typewriter, if you get what I'm saying. Because even though I don't think Dame would take that stance literally, I just thought it was a bad look. I just thought it was a bad look.
Yeah, and everything we know about Damian Lillard, he's a great guy. I never believed that for a second. If he got traded somewhere, Damian Lillard's not going to report. He's going to be unhappy. He's too professional to do that. But it's funny. So that memo gets handed down, and you've heard a lot of people, how come this guy and that guy, Anthony Davis? Well, hang on. Anthony Davis was fined $50,000 because his agent, Rich Paul, said he wants to be traded. Didn't say to the Lakers, said he was going to be traded. Aaron Goodwin, I'm going to forget the year, but I was covering the team. Nate Robinson got fined $25,000 because Aaron Goodwin – Damian Lillard's agent
had
come out and said that my client needs to play or he's got to go someplace else. And then even, the Lakers and the Knicks, the league's going to take care of them. Well, the Chris Paul trade got vetoed by David Stern.
Yeah, yeah.
So stuff has happened to these teams. Everyone all of a sudden is making it seem like the league is somehow picking on Damian Lillard and the Miami Heat. I don't think they're doing that. What they're doing is this is right now the biggest story in the NBA, and it hasn't been a good look. And give Joe Cronin credit. We wouldn't know the guy if we tripped over him, but he's been consistent on his message. We'll trade you, but we have to get a deal that works for us. And I get the Miami media, and I'm friends with those guys, but they're all crazy. The Miami fans are all crazy. I understand that you think it's all about Pat Riley, but Joe Cronin, believe it or not, is allowed to worry about his own team and try to do what's right for his own. Everybody just wants, well, who the heck's Joe Cronin? Joe, trade him to Miami and just take the whatever deal you can get. Well, it doesn't really work like that. And I think Joe Cronin has handled it well, and I like Aaron Goodwin. He's a good guy. He's always been really cool to deal with, but they really haven't handled this well over the past month.
CP, you know, we talked to Dame Ring of the Jack Ramsey show, and even he says, like, this is not something along, like, Dame's lines, like, very professional. You know, he gave his all to the city. And you just hear all this stuff, and it's like, we hear that it's more harmonious than it is like a battle between the front office and Dame right now. And I think the agent, as to Frank's point, this is just playing it all wrong, right? Like, you gotta at some point know when to dial it back. But I also understand like Adam Silver's concern, where it's like, you also now have James Harden, who's going to be asking out of another team. You had Ben Simmons, who, you know, didn't show up at all for the Philadelphia 76ers. And if you're looking at how Silver wants to this league to be conducted. And you have all these new players coming in, right, especially from this draft class that's so young. He doesn't want them to see an example where it's like, if you're not happy when you get to a point in your career, you can just do whatever you want.
That's right.
Go wherever you want to be. And, you know, I agree with that, because at some point, are we ever going to get like consistency that we want to see on a team where you get that continuity and you get a good league that's just, you know, not everyone either joining up? Like, we have parity right now, but would it cycle back if you would just allow these, especially the new players, just to say, I don't like it here. Get me out of here.
Yeah.
I don't care what's going on here. I don't care. I have a contract. I don't have to oblige to it. I don't like it here. Let me go.
And don't you guys also, let me ask you a question. Don't you think that Bradley Beal, when he signed that crazy contract and he had no trade clause, he knew, I would say that he was probably, I'll be fair, 80% sure he was never going to finish his career with Washington.
Yes.
So you guys know how it works now.
Yeah.
The players, it used to be, oh my God, he's going to become a free agent. He could leave. And I get it. Kevin Durant did it and LeBron bounced around a bunch of times as a free agent. I think a lot of guys now are thinking, let me get the crazy money.
Yeah.
Now I know I'm getting the money. And then when I don't like it here, I'm going to kind of force my way out. And I think that's where the owners and the general manager are saying, hang on a second. We got to try to put an end to this. This is not a good look here, because guys are getting their crazy money. And then 1 or 2 years into it, they're saying, okay, I got my money. You now need to trade me. Not only trade me, but I need to go to this team right here. And I think that's turning off a lot of people. And I think the league is aware of that.
Yeah. The play is absolutely get your bag now, worry about it later, get your trade
right.
later. And that's been, you know, it's been going on for a number of years, but I'm still wondering if this memo or the actions by the league, is it still going to curtail the whole, you know, player empowerment these players are running the league? Because look, the Nets got a substantial package for Kevin Durant from Phoenix, but he still got to his destination. For
yep.
James Harden, originally he did want Philly, went to the Nets first, and then ultimately got routed to where he wants to go. And now he's in a position where with his contract, it's kind of Clippers or bust. I still think Portland sends Dame to Miami. I don't think the league steps in and vetoes anything. And furthermore, I don't see a team-to-team trade that's going to get the Blazers this Kevin Durant-sized package that they're looking for. I don't see it. There's only but so many teams that will jump in the sweepstakes here.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, he's a 34-year-old point guard. And yes, Steph Curry could, you know, did enough a couple of years ago to lead his team to a championship, but it's different when you're training for Kevin Durant. And give Kevin Durant, you know, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff Kevin Durant does on social media. To me, like, he's too big time of a player to be, like, engaging in that stuff. Like, you think, like, Lionel Messi has gone Twitter responding to fans? Let morons like me go back at the fans. You're Kevin Durant, for crying out loud, right? So, yeah, but Kevin Durant, to his credit, when he asked to be traded with that June 30th, I think it was right after Kyrie opted in. You could draw your own conclusions there. He asked to be traded. They stayed quiet.
Yeah.
And the Nets, to their credit, said, we'll trade him, but we got to get a deal that satisfies us. Now, the Nets were a little crazy. They asked for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That was never going to happen. But then, you know, in February, Kevin Durant went to them privately and said, if you could trade me to the Phoenix Suns, I'd want to go there. They got a willing partner in Matt Ishbia, Isaiah Thomas probably involved as well. That, you know, we all know about Isaiah.
Yeah.
And I think they were able to make the deal go down. But to Kevin Durant's credit, it was done very quietly. Where the Kyrie Irving stuff was like playing out. And Kyrie, the way that he handled it was not well, because Kyrie wanted to go to either the Lakers or the Clippers.
Right.
And I think he thought maybe that could happen. Next thing you know is he ends up on Dallas. It was so funny. His first two press conferences, no matter what, eventually like the third question was like, how do you think it'll be playing with Luka? And he just started ranting about the Brooklyn Nets and Sean Marks, and they weren't honest with me. And I remember saying, you watch when Kevin Durant has a press conference. I guarantee you he's going to praise the Brooklyn Nets. And Kevin Durant thanked the Nets. He thanked Josiah because –
The
way that he handled it, he just handled it a lot better, and he got exactly what he wanted. Hey, look, Kyrie's still going to make great money, but Kyrie wanted to be in either one of the LA teams. I'll believe that forever.
And that's kind of why I think, to CP's point, why Dame will go to Miami, because
agreed.
He has been so good to Portland. I think they'll figure it out. And to CP's point, like, who are the other teams? I think outside of Philly, like, could I actually see that working? Maybe the Clippers. Like, if the Clippers wanted to get involved, but then we're just talking about teams that don't have enough draft capital to give
That's
back
right.
to Portland. And it's like, all right, at this point, who's going to get involved in this deal. And it's not many teams that need a point guard at this point. There's so many teams that are just set right now, either because they just drafted or they just have someone already established on a good contract that they don't even need to go after Dame Lillard.
Yeah. And if you're the Nets, you know, they're not going to trade Mikal Bridges. You just signed
right.
Cam Johnson, so he couldn't
be
included anyway.
Right.
Like, you want to keep Nick Claxton. So it's odd because for a lot of teams, it's not that – there is a – obviously, if you have Damian Lillard on your team, it's great. But to your point, you need the assets to make the trade. A lot of people don't want to give up what they would have to give up. Like, if I'm Philadelphia, and I love Damian Lillard, he's great. I'm keeping Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
He's too young. He's too good of a guy. He's got a really bright future. Damian Lillard's 34. And the guy's been in the conference finals one time. God bless him. Again, he's a great guy. He got swept by Golden State. Kevin Durant did not play in one of those games. They had a double-digit lead in all four games, and they lost all four. You know, so sometimes when you're playing in Portland, you could kind of avoid the criticism. Go ask Patrick Ewing what it's like to play in a big market, and you lose in the conference finals. They say, hey, moron, how come you didn't win a championship this year? Then next year he's back in the conference finals. Hey, moron, how come you didn't win a championship? Like, he's every year playoffs, averaging 25 points, and other guys in some of these other markets, when they fail, they kind of float under the radar. Sometimes it's not the worst thing to be in a small market.
Yeah, and it's like you said, with the Nets, it just doesn't make sense, right? They're not going to trade Bridges, and you can't trade Cam Johnson. Those are your two best, most promising young players, and you would want to add a Damian Lillard to at least one or two of those guys to make it make sense. And then from a Philly standpoint, unless they're able to get some sort of 3-T miracle trade where Harden
exactly.
gets routed to the Clippers, Dame goes to Philly, and then Morey and Portland, Cronin, get what they want. Because both of those guys are in a tough position with the gun to their head. Morey wants to make sure that he can maintain their contender window to put a team around Embiid. And then Portland wants to make sure that they get their return for Dame. So unless Maxey's in a deal, I don't see it.
And do you guys think that the Knicks not getting involved is yet another sign that they're just loading up to maybe take a run at either Joel Embiid or perhaps Karl-Anthony Towns? Because they still have the assets to make up. I mean, they can make a deal for Damian Lillard. I think the Knicks feel like they have their point guard, and I think they're probably thinking, we're going to try to go after a big man or some 6'10 forward or something like that can play.
Well, let me switch over to my Knicks fan TV hat for a second. yes to Joel Embiid.
Great segue.
No
to Karl-Anthony Towns. No, thank you.
Karl-Anthony Towns.
No.
You don't want Joel Embiid.
No,
I do.
Absolutely.
No, I do want Joel Embiid. Give me Joel Embiid. No to Karl-Anthony Towns, though.
Yeah.
I don't think him and Brunson would be a good pairing.
Yeah, I think they're stacking it up. They're waiting for what happens in Philadelphia. I think Mitchell is more of a candidate, Spider Mitchell, again, rather than Karl-Anthony Towns.
I
think it's Mitchell and Embiid that they're sitting idly by. I think that's why they stacked up the guard rotation, adding DiVincenzo, who will help the team, but it's still going to muddy up the rotation. I think they're just waiting to make that push.
And I also think Jalen Brunson is a guy that's going to attract players. I think what the Knicks have done is I think that right now they're viewed as a more stable franchise. What's gone on the last 3 years, they're making the playoffs, getting out of the first round this year. And Jalen Brunson is all about the team. I mean, you look at every level that he's been at, you know, whether it's high school, I mean, nobody wins two college championships anymore. And now in the NBA, you know, he had, as the lead guard on a team, they finished with the fifth best record in the East. They beat Miami 3 times during the regular season. They took him to a game 6. The guy just is a winning player. I still don't understand how these GMs all passed on him when he was available. I mean, listen, I've known him for a long time in the family, so maybe I'm probably slightly biased, but I saw the guy play. My daughter went to school with him. I saw him play all the time. You don't think he's going to be a good NBA player? I find that one a little hard to believe. We're allowed to not know that. We don't get paid to be scouts. They make pretty good money. They should know that.
Yeah, true indeed, man. And look, Knicks had a great year. I thought they had a great run, 2 games away from the conference finals. I think anybody would have signed up for that based on where they were projected to finish. But what do you think about Julius, Frank? You know, Julius, we talk about Julius Randle at length on our show, Knicks Fan TV, and throughout the year. I can't think of a more polarizing player in Knick history that is just literally – peaks and valleys, high peaks, very low valleys, than a Julius Randle. What's your take on his situation?
I'll say this, you know, in his defense, after the way that he played last year and just like that interaction with the fans, which wasn't good, and you wonder, like, sometimes you start that and it never, you could really never get it back. I mean, he had a terrific season this year. He still was an all-star, but to your point, just too inconsistent. Then that's always going to be a big problem. If they were going to trade him, he does have some value now, but I doubt that's going to happen. But I'll say this. Remember where he was and where he's been now on the Knicks. I mean, it barely was a starting player. It was only a couple of years. Nobody, when the Knicks got him, everybody thought, oh, this will be just like kind of a one-year rental. And he has played pretty well over the last two seasons. I'd like to see the ball a little bit more in Jalen Brunson's hands. And I think that's what Brian Scalabrine, when I do the radio show with him, he says that Randall plays a lot better when he's moving the ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once
yeah.
he starts pounding it into oblivion, when everything slows down and it kind of kills the flow of the offense. There's no question about it.
And that's just kind of been the conundrum. And to CP, I think it's more, it's not peaks and valleys. There's a legitimate divide between like Knicks fandom. Like, are you pro Julius or are you anti Julius? Right. I mean, when I was out in Vegas, I was like, every time I talked about the Knicks and I saw a couple Knicks fans, they're like, yeah, I think we can go to the next level, but, and I'm like, who are you thinking of, Julius? They're like, yeah, man. And it's like, or you're like, yeah, Julius is the greatest player that we've had. It's like, it's so divided right now between Julius. But to your point, Frank, like it's clear as night and day. Like when he moves the rock and he can move without the ball, like everything happens. And I think that's the more confusing part of his game is that he can do it. And then he reverts back to some games where it's like, he's just like playing with his food too much, you know, or it's like he wants to show that he's really this excellent ball player where like he can do whatever he wants, maybe like to a LeBron James level. But it's like, if you just play with your game, like if you play within your envelope to what we've seen, like moving the rock, getting to position, finding your open teammate, that's actually when you're 10 times better than you holding onto the rock for 10 seconds and then putting up some rando shot.
And you wonder too, sometimes about the dynamic of a locker room. And I'm just throwing this out there. So he was the guy. Then here comes Jalen Brunson, and he is, you know, he becomes quickly the face of the team. His dad's on the coaching staff. His, you know, his agent's father is the GM. He's had this relationship. You wonder if Julius Randle feels like, oh, I wonder, I'm not that guy anymore. But what I think he'd be missing the point is that Jalen Brunson isn't about that. It's not like Jalen Brunson said, this is my team. We will do everything my way. He's all about the team. It's not about himself. And look at the guys that he played with in Villanova. Look how well all of them do in the pros. He was always part of an ensemble cast. And remember last year when they, you know, in the playoffs, you know, Luka missed a couple of those first games against the Utah Jazz, and Jalen raised his level of play. He's all about the team. So Julius Randle, I think, is in a terrific situation. I just hope it's not that petty jealousy which sometimes invades teams and invades locker rooms.
Ego. And, it's going to be interesting to see how they carried forward in year two together. Well, what do you think about the DiVincenzo pickup, Frank?
Oh, I like it. I think you have to be a Wildcat, either a Kentucky Wildcat, a
Villanova Wildcat,
or a CAA Wildcat.
That's right,
you have to be one of those to be on the team. Now, hey, when he, first of all, he was better for Golden State than Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole's taking crazy shots. DiVincenzo will rebound. He could score. I think the big thing for him will be staying healthy. You know, the year that they won in Milwaukee, he didn't play because he was hurt. Mm. This year, kind of in and out in the lineup. But that dude competes. I think, you know, him being with guys that he knows, playing for Tom Thibodeau, I think that was a good move for them. I think a lot of – and I'm glad that they got him. I think a lot of fans were thinking, what's going to be the home run move we're going to make? Because everyone last year was waiting for Donovan Mitchell. Everyone thought that was going to happen. I think everyone's waiting to see that move because – you know, the Knicks have a terrific team, but you want to see them kind of take that next step to really move close to being a contender.
Now, the guard position for the Knicks is a little cluttered. I mean, you got Grimes, Quickley, DiVincenzo, Brunson. Do you think this is like the calling card for that Quickley will be moved with the DiVincenzo signing?
Yeah, I could see something like that because, you know, Brunson's going to play a lot of minutes. He wants to play. I think he was hurt during the playoffs and he still played a ton of minutes. He's just cut that way, and Tom is going to rely on him a lot. He has a lot of faith in him, but those other guys are going to play. That's why I found it funny with the story about Evan Fournier, who came out and was kind of complaining about not playing, and I know some of the Knicks fans all of a sudden were about Derrick Rose and Evan Fournier. So on the one hand, you wanted all the young guys to play. Now that the young guys are playing, everybody was wondering what happened to Evan Fournier. And remember, when Evan Fournier was playing, I think they were 10-13, and he was shooting like 30%. On three, so they finally made the switch to the young guys. Those guys will all get a chance. But you know what it's going to come down to, how they're competing on the defensive end. You can't be a one-way player with Tom. It's not going to work.
Absolutely cannot, man. Also on the Knicks, you know, last week or so, and shout out to our guy Frank Katz, who covers the Knicks for The Athletic. He used to cover the Knicks on the beat, Frank, many moons ago before he moved on to bigger and better things. But the lack of media access continues to, be an issue to those in the beat. Fred Katz of The Athletic reported that the Knicks had declined a request from The Athletic for President Leon Rose to hold an on-the-record media availability. Rose has not spoken on the record to independent media in almost 2 years, has not done a solo press conference since joining the Knicks in 2020. Knicks also are not making DiVincenzo available. No news conference, just a faxed in memo about how great he is. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, my thought is it probably comes from ownership. And I think what the Knicks do is NBA mandated media, they will abide by those rules. So day of practice, coaches available, some of the players, not every player is required to talk. Day of game, coach will talk at shoot around. He'll talk before game. He'll talk after game. The locker room will be open. The players are available to talk. Yeah. The Knicks are not going to grant any other access for press conference, which of course to me is short-sighted. When you sign Jalen Brunson, why wouldn't you have a press conference for him?
Right.
Celebrate the whole thing. Now, I get it. Some people thought, people are going to ask him whether or not they were tampering. I'd want that question asked. I would want Jalen Brunson, who's pretty smart, to say, did my father ask me where I was going to play basketball? Yeah, he's my father. Did he said I should consider the Knicks? Yes, he said that because he's my father. When ultimately I made the choice, that was me because I'm an adult.
Yeah.
End of tampering and all this other nonsense. But after the season, you want a playoff series, put Tom Thibodeau and have Jalen Brunson up there and then have Leon Rose talking. I don't understand that part of it. And I know a lot of the people that, you know, that watch you guys and listen to you will say, I don't care about the media. I'm glad that they're not answering questions. Well, remember that the next time you go to a restaurant and you're unhappy with the service and they say, I want to talk to the manager. They say, no, you're not allowed to. How is it any different?
Well, you know what? Because I
don't like
Frank,
the plumbing job. You did. No, I'm not talking. We're not talking.
The thing is that you watch and, you know, they got Leon Rose on the MSG show. Clearly with cookie cutter canned answers, right? The PR stooges, they're drafting up all his responses. They have Dolan. He'll go on K-Show. He'll go on Joe and Evan or Carton and Roberts with a full notebook of answers. Yeah. And he's like, hold on one second. He's like, wait, page three, continue. You know, it's just not – there's no authenticity in those interviews.
And, you know, so years ago – and it was the year that Larry Brown was covering the team. I should probably write a book about that.
Yeah,
that was a crazy year.
Yeah.
But we're in Memphis, and, you know, the whole thing is falling apart, unlike the week before it was falling apart. It was just nuts. We walk into the gym, and Jim Dolan was in there with Hank Ratner, a couple other Knick officials, and Isaiah was in there, and it looked like Jim Dolan had talked to the team. And we go to Larry Brown. We ask him if Jim had spoken to the team, and Larry was the best. He's like, yeah, I don't like that. I don't like when people are talking to my team. The way Larry talks.
Yeah.
He's now upset that the owner and Isaiah were addressing the team after practice. So thank you, Larry, for giving us the easy story. The next day, we're going to get Jim Dolan in the hotel at after the team had eaten breakfast. So they brought us into this room, and I kid you not. And, like, you know the way the media is. If you're going to give people free food, like, we attack it like hyenas. So they said, there's food over there. You go over there. There was, like, a half a piece of French toast. But there was come on, man. Like, give that to, like, the rats.
Yeah.
So there was no food, which, all right. I sit down and have a cup of coffee. And Jim Dolan would sit there, and he was good. He would talk. You know, Listen, sometimes he said something, you could see the PR guy go, make a face, knowing that we could turn that into a headline. But we used to get along with him pretty well. I think what happens was when you become the owner and the team is losing, and when you start to become part of the criticism, I think he had a really tough time handling that. Jerry Jones doesn't care.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban likes it because he likes to engage. There were just some owners that are going to be like that. Jim Dolan didn't like that. He likes sitting courtside and being near the bench, and he's going to bring guests to them. I'm the owner of the team. Look at the players. They look at me. They nod. I'm friendly with them. Oh, I'm on the back page of the killing me and the team because we just won 23 games. He didn't like that part of it, and he would lash out a little bit at the media. And I always would say, you know, we don't dictate the coverage. The results dictate the coverage. Believe me. Go back to 96. I know it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
You have to go to the archives. Go back to 97 when they won 57 games.
Yeah,
go back to 99 when they made the finals. I'm pretty sure the coverage was what you would consider pretty favorable, but I think that's the issue. They're not going to have the players talk, and I think ultimately it hurts the players in terms of even their brand a little bit, because Jalen Brunson is great. And the year that he had, that he should be out front and center. They should have flown him out to Vegas and said, oh, by the way, Jalen will be available tomorrow, guys, at 3 o'clock. Come by the gym.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Have that guy become – I would have two spokesmen on the team, the coach and the star player. Guess who does that? All these teams. Look at Darvinham, LeBron James, all the teams, Jimmy Butler, Eric Spoelstra, Nikola Jokic, and Michael Malone. That's the way it's always been done. It was the way it was done when Pat Riley was here. Pat Riley had the media eating out of his hand when he coached the New York Knicks. Now he's taking it to a different level in Miami. He runs that town.
Yeah.
But I think it's a way to help your franchise. And Tom learned under Jeff Van Gundy. He knows how to handle that stuff. And you have Jalen Brunson. That should be the message every day coming from the Knicks. It should be mostly from those two guys.
And that's like how you help a player get into superstardom, right? Is because of that marketability. So as to your point, Jalen should be out there. I mean, he had 41 points in a game six by himself when no one else could hit the broadside of a barn. So I would totally, as to your point, Frank, have him out there. But, you know, there's another part of the Knicks fan base that says, you know, what are we going to get from Leon Rose anyway? He's not going to give us any intel on what his next move is or anything like that. So why even have, you know, the journalists ask him any questions? What would your response be to that?
Well, first of all, it's the job of the reporters to try to get information on what the team is trying to do. Last year, you guys made a run for Donovan Mitchell. Do you feel you need to add a star to this team? He's got to give you some kind of answer. It's not going to be very negative because the Knicks had a terrific season. But I would think the fan base wants to know what is the plan here? And it gives him a chance to kind of outline what the plan is. I always say this. One of the best moments every year is after the Miami Heat get eliminated. It's about, you know, 2 or 3 days after the fact. And Pat Riley sits there and he gives you the state of the Miami Heat. And he tells you everything, you know, to a certain degree, what he can say, what he can reveal to you, and he kind of sets the agenda for what the offseason is going to be like. I think it's the opportunity to kind of shape what your message is. Joe Cronin used that in Las Vegas to tell people exactly where the Portland Trailblazers stood with Damian Lillard. I think he helped himself there. I just think the Knicks, they do themselves a disservice, especially, listen, Leon, I covered Leon, and I've known Leon forever as an agent. Leon did not like being quoted as an agent. That wasn't his thing. He didn't want to be quoted in the paper. He didn't like any of that stuff. Tom and Jalen Rose, though, they could do that job. And I just said, once having the GM talk before the season and after the season is not a big deal. That's not asking for too much.
Yeah. Well, the Knicks don't even have a GM right now. We just got a president of basketball operations.
Yeah, president.
It's Gerson, man. Gerson's definitely getting the gig, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, once again, we are talking to Frank Isola, man, covers the NBA, CP the franchise. Alex Vitaros on the ones and twos here. Salute to everybody in the chat. We've got a lot of people in the chat here commenting here. So let's get those likes up, hit that share button, and subscribe to the channel. Now, we've been talking NBA, but obviously with Frank having covered the Knicks, we got to dig into a little bit of Knicks talk here. And Frank, man, I was going through, I got this Knicks fans ultimate fact book from the year 2000, man. And I turned over to the beach section, and I got a couple of interesting photos here. Number one, see if you could make that out. I see
Berman on there.
Might be a little blurry. And then we got a young Frank Isola, man. A young Frank. Where is he? There he is. It's a little blurry on my camera, but there he is, man. Young Frank Isola, New York.
See Dave D'Alessandro, Greg Logan on there.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole crew.
Yeah, man. Mike Daugherty, Journal News.
Who was covering for the New York Times? Is that Selena or?
Yeah, Selena Roberts. Selena Roberts. Broke the A-Rod story, right? When A-Rod was on Roy's, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Selena's very good. She was a bit of a pit bull.
Yeah.
On the beach, she would go after people. That's for sure.
Who was who's your favorite player to cover when you were there?
You know, I got the guy that I really hit it off with, and it was good because he really ran the locker room was Larry Johnson.
Mm.
So Larry didn't really want to deal with the media when he first got there. I think he probably heard horror stories and he realized we're just a bunch of softies. But I really became very close to him. And And then you would hear Jeff Van Gundy, Tom Thibodeau talk about him. You know, Larry used to get to games, I think at 4 o'clock, because he didn't want to take, he had the back issue and he didn't want to take the anti-inflammatory. So he'd have to do a lot of stretching to get himself ready to play. The amount of work that this guy put in, and he was the one guy that everybody, whether it was the young players, the older players, everyone respected Larry Johnson. Plus, remember when he came to the Knicks, he had changed his game. When he was in Charlotte, he was grandmama playing above the rim. The back injury made him a different kind of player, but he relied on his quickness and all these like little, you know, playing angles and the way that he was in the post with spin moves.
Yeah.
But I loved covering him. I love covering Charles Oakley. You know, Charles is my guy. Charles was great. Charles would get mad at you. It was weird because, you know, the 97 season, the Knicks are going to have a good team. And like the second game of the year, Charles didn't play in the fourth quarter. Whatever the Knicks had going that night, Jeff just stuck with that lineup. And then after the game, of Charles, like, whatever, whatever, I don't know why I'm not in there. And it's like kind of ticked off. So we all write it. The players then all give Charles a hard time, and Jeff gave him a hard time about it. And then Charles took it out on us. I can't believe you guys wrote that bull. Charles, you're the one that said it. But the players were always like that back then. So
yeah.
Jeff Van Gundy takes over for the Knicks, and they start out, they lose in Philly. They beat the great Michael Jordan team. They go on a Texas trip, and the last game was in San Antonio. And if you remember, Anthony Mason was the, you know, God rest his soul. Yeah. Anthony Mason was the point forward under Don Nelson. Don Nelson was trying to get away from Patrick Ewing, really get away from
him. Try to trade him.
He
for
wanted
Shaq.
Either Patrick gone or Don Nelson eventually left. So he got away from him. But Jeff was like, it was going to be Patrick. We're going to get the ball into Patrick, play through him. So after the game in San Antonio, Anthony Mason is buck naked, is staring into the locker room, and Derek Harper, who was a great guy to cover too, is like whispering in his ear. So a couple of us notice it, and we're looking, and we're like, we got to ask him what's going on. So we go over to Anthony Mason, and all we said was, is everything all right? He starts going off. I don't like what's happening. I think they're phasing me out. Why are we all of a sudden going back to Patrick? And we're all standing there with our microphones, writing. And we end up writing the story, and the next day he says that he was misquoted. And we have it on tape. And it was me and Mike Wise from the Times who was covering. He said, I'm never talking to Frank and Mike ever again. And this was in March. The Knicks play Chicago in the second round of the series. We're at Moody Bible College in Chicago after a Knick practice. The bus was in the back. He thought the bus was in the front. He walks out, and all of a sudden I walk out too, and the two of us are facing each other. And he says, what's up? I said, how are you doing? He's like, can you believe this? Like, they're giving the ball to Patrick, and I think they're trying to phase me out. He started repeating exactly what he told me. And he said, you know, when he said I'm not going to talk to him anymore, he hadn't spoken to me until that day in Chicago. And back then, I'm like, I am not writing any. You can do it. Go ahead. I'm not writing any. But those guys were great. It was also different. There's no social media.
Yeah.
There's no Twitter. And then, you know, the newspapers had a much bigger impact. But great, you know, like Derek Harper was.
Harper's great.
One of a kind. Let me tell you a quick story about him.
Yeah.
So Jeff gets the job on a Friday in Philadelphia. We go to Jeff's room. Again, you'd be arrested if you did this today. Three of or four of us knock on his door. He answers. We interview Jeff. They're going to play Philly that night. That Philly team stinks. Jeff lost that first night. People always forget that. Jeff's first game, he loses. The next day, they go up to Purchase. They have about a three-hour practice, and we're just sitting outside the gym. We couldn't believe they were practicing this long because they're playing the Chicago Bulls at 5 o'clock. At Madison Square Garden. It's going to be Selection Sunday, and NBC would always put the Knicks and the Bulls at that 5 o'clock area. They wanted them to watch the game. The players are all like, I can't believe the practice we had. It feels like the old Knicks, all this stuff. Jeff then has a shoot-around the next day at the Garden. So they have a shoot-around on a day where they're going to have a 5 o'clock game. I go to the shoot-around. I see Derek Harper after the shoot-around. He's just sitting down. He's completely drenched and exhausted, and we're just talking. And he says, man, he goes, if you bet, he goes, you should bet on us because I'm telling you, we're going to win this game tonight. And that was a 72-win Bulls.
72-10. Yeah.
And I remember thinking, you guys just lost to Philly last. I didn't say this to him. I'm like, you guys just lost to Philadelphia, that crappy team. You guys are going to get smoked. And sure enough, the Knicks played great. And Derek Harper, late in the fourth quarter, he had an unbelievable game. And after a timeout, they, you know, go New York, go. The crowd is going crazy. And he was standing near us at the scorer's table. And he just looked at me and he winked. He said, I told you, Frank. It was back then when we sat courtside. One more, just an addendum to that story. The Knicks play Chicago. everyone is asking Phil Jackson after the game about the Nick job. And Jeff had, you know, come up through Pat Riley, and they had wars back then. You know, Pat Riley and Phil Jackson used to kill each other in the press.
Yeah.
So Phil Jackson starts campaigning for the job. The Knicks day fly to Dallas. They're going to have an off day. Or they're going to practice. We go to the practice. The practice ends. We're talking to Jeff. And Jeff said, hey, let me ask you guys a question. Now, we didn't really know that much about Jeff. And he said, what did you guys make of Phil Jackson openly campaigning for a job that's currently held? And we said, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the Knicks want him. And he starts destroying Phil Jackson. And we're like writing. And it was like, oh, this is going to be good. This is like in 3 days, all the stories were better than any story we had. They, you know, Jeff getting the job, then beating the Bulls, and then Jeff going after Phil. Like Jeff went after Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole league was afraid of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Like that's like in the MLS right now. Be the first player that commits a dirty foul on Lionel Messi and be the coach that goes after Lionel Messi. Good luck. Jeff was going after, like, you know, Michael Jordan. You needed the Pope to bless you before you did something like that.
Jeff
was a trip, man.
Jeff,
he was fun
didn't
to
care,
cover.
Man. That was why this is my favorite Knicks coach. He was a bulldog, man, an absolute bulldog. I remember, I think Harp told us a story when Jeff got, like, hip-checked by Oakley at one of their South Carolina practices and almost went after Oakley. I don't know if it was Harp. It might have been Chris Herring that told that story when he was talking about blood in the garden. Jeff is tough as nails, man.
I'll tell you what. Jeff, one time, Xavier McDaniels showed up in Charlotte. He wasn't on the Knicks anymore. And he walked in. Xavier McDaniels, he played 1 year, right?
Yeah, one year.
It was just one. Players love that guy. And Xavier's a nut. He walked into the locker room. He said something to Jeff, which he must have been busting Jeff about something. And Jeff punched him in the chest. I could not believe how hard Jeff punched him. And X-Man didn't even move. And all the players are just looking at him. You know, then they start, you know, F-bombing each other back. It was all in good fun. But Jeff was a piece of work. I will say this about the Knicks, though. In 97, they had a great team. They won the 57 games. They beat the Bulls 3 times. And if you guys remember, the last game of the season, they played the Bulls, and everybody played. This is how different the NBA was.
Yeah, yeah.
The game didn't mean anything to anybody. But Michael played, Pippen played, you know, Patrick played, Allen Houston, everybody. The Knicks win that game, and Pippen shot an air ball, which would have won the game. He missed a three, shot an air ball. So the Knicks ended up taking 3 from Chicago. Then, of course, the fight happens with Miami.
Yeah.
The Knicks were convinced that they were going to win the championship that year.
Yeah.
But, like, I always felt like watching Michael Jordan play in person, which for me is the greatest thrill of all the years that I covered sports, like it was amazing watching him play. I just never thought back then anyone was going to beat him 4 out of 7 times. I just didn't think it was, if he was healthy, he was just going to find a way to win. I want to believe because I love those guys on the Knicks back then. Like it would have been cool if they could have beaten him, but I don't know. As Larry Johnson would always say, that black cat.
Black cat.
Right, that's what they called Mike. That black cat.
Yep. Absolutely, man, and out, man. You know, Frank thought he was going to get tomatoes in the chat, man. The people are loving the Knicks stories. This is the NBA report, but Knicks Fan TV is taking over. Shout out to Ms. Carroll's math class in the chat. She said, Frank, you're okay with me despite what the Knicks fans say. Would love to see you on KFTV. We got Hulu Caesar says, more stories. Always great to hear from Isola. So we're kind of doing like a little PR for you here, man.
Now, I don't get the whole criticism. I'm just covering the team. When the team does badly, what do you want me to say?
Listen, I think.
And let me ask you a question. News. Was I wrong? I didn't think the hire of Phil Jackson was going to be a great hire. Like, I don't think it's a like learn on the fly type of position.
Yeah.
And I just think I also felt that Phil, sadly, wasn't in great health. Like, you need to like grind when you do that
grind.
Job.
You got to grind.
That's not an easy job.
Yeah.
Listen, if you were hiring Phil Jackson to be the coach, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, the guy is a legendary coach. They're hiring to be a first-time GM. It's not an easy job, man. Like, you think Sam Presti isn't grinding every day?
Yeah, sure. I think even Magic had said it when he had stepped down from Lakers always had Magic in and out of those executive positions. But I think the last time he was there, he said, listen, you need a full-time commitment here. And this is when they were saying Phil was sleeping in draft workouts and, you know, drafting all these guys. But I think a lot of us is just – wanted it to work out because of the name and the persona of the Vicente.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's smart. He's, you know, everything. It was a disaster, man. Complete disaster.
Yeah. I also think, too, with Phil, and the guy, again, legendary coach, but if you're around Jeff Van Gundy, he always invokes the name of Patrick Ewing. You're around Pat Riley, he mentions Magic, Kareem, he mentions Patrick Ewing. You surround Greg Popovich, he's mentioning Tim Duncan, David Robinson, Maddo, and Tony Parker. You're around Phil, I'll give you a nickel for every time he mentions Michael Jordan. He doesn't really mention his name that much. Mm. A little of it is a little too much, the coaching part of it. You did coach Michael Jordan. Be proud of that. You won with the guy. That's that. There's something to be said for coaching great players and winning with them. That was the other, and then at his press conference, you know, you knew what the press conference was going to be, and they rolled out the red carpet as they should. And even one of the Eagles was there. Glenn Fry was there because he was friendly with Irving Azoff, who kind of helped put the deal together with Jim Dolan. And I'll never forget Phil Jackson. You knew it was going to happen. He's going on and on about the beloved Knicks championship teams and the connection and this and the connection. I kept thinking, yeah, that's all well and good, but you still weren't going to take the job unless you were making between like $12 and $15 million. It wasn't Red, the connection with Brett Holtzman and Willis Reed that brought you to New York. Let's be fair now. You know, they were going to have to pay you big time bucks to do it.
Now I got to ask before we go on to the next topic, because you saw, if you're around Van Gundy, then you saw Tom Thibodeau. So what, do you have any stories about Tom Thibodeau during any of those practices or his assistant coaching tenure?
Well, I'll tell you this about Tom. One of the coolest things that I remember, or this is early on, I always used to just talk to Tom because he'd be, you know, he was always working out guys very early. You know, they talk about player development. He was always working the players out, and he was done working out a few guys. He was just sitting near the court at the Garden, and I had brought my son to the game because the Knicks were about to play the Lakers. Out comes Kobe Bryant, and he and Tom have a big hug. They're talking. Tom introduces me to him. Then I introduce him to Kobe to my son. He could not have been any nicer. And then Kobe started telling the story about how when he was in high school in Philadelphia, he would go to St. Joe's where the Sixers had practiced, and he would scrimmage with them whenever he was available. And when the scrimmages were over, Tom would sit there working with Kobe Bryant, working him out, and was teaching him stuff. Now, and that's at the time when nobody knows that Kobe Bryant's going to become Kobe Bryant. You know that he's a terrific player. You don't know that he's going to become this legendary guy. But that's how Tom had the connection with Kobe. And that's why it was so cool years later when Tom was an assistant coach with Boston and they play the Lakers in the finals. And Kobe was asked about, you know, how do you think Boston will stop you? And he said, well, Tom Thibodeau will try to figure out a way. Like, so it was, but Tom, listen, Tom's a great guy. He's just very loyal. You know, his guys are Jerry Tarkanian, John Lucas, who he's very close with, Ron Adams, who's an assistant coach with the Warriors. You know, those guys were as thick as thieves. Mm. He was with those guys for a long time. And Bill Musselman, obviously, who he had in Minnesota. But, you know, to me, it's like he's more from the Jeff coaching tree because that's where he really got his big break.
Yeah, it's a true story, man. Shout out to Coach Tibbs. And on this last segment, Frank, I got to get your opinion on this. Dr. J made a little bit of headlines this week in an interview with George DeAngelo. Dr. J, we talked about Jordan and some of the greats. Here was Dr. J's top 10 of all time, in no order. Jerry West, the big old Oscar Robinson, Elgin Baylor, Wilt, Bill Russell, MJ, Kareem, Magic, the Mailman, and Tiny Archibald. And now Joy asks Dr. J. He's like, you know, what's up? No LeBron, no Steph Curry. Here's what he had to say. Here's what Dr. J had to say here. No Steph, no LeBron, and his chief adversary, Larry Bird, left off this list. Frank, your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, he did have, right. He had Larry Bird by the neck, so maybe he doesn't want to put him on there. This is a, you know, an ode to all his great teammates that he had.
Yeah.
I mean, his contemporaries. That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's just showing them respect. So you're telling me Steph Curry's not on the list, but if he leaves the NBA tomorrow, how would he not be on the list? Steph Curry is one of the greatest players and one of the most influential players, let's face it, in the history of the game because of the three-point shot. And obviously LeBron belongs on there as well. That's fine. I still remember Dr. J, old number 32 with the New York Nets. I remember going to a game as a really small kid at Nassau Coliseum. He'd be the franchise, is well aware of that place.
Yeah.
And it was Italian bread night. and we went to see Dr. J play. It was awesome. They were handing out the Italian bread on the way out, and we didn't get one. I was like, whoa. That ain't good. But we did get to see Dr. J play with that great head of hair that he had.
It's evolved, man. Italian bread, no garlic, no butter, no garlic. Just the look.
Exactly.
Okay, take this home. You do something with it. And now we got exactly. bobbleheads, man. So, yeah, you're right, man. I think it's just, you know, that older generation wanted to pay homage to their generation. You talk to a lot of OGs, a lot of guys in their, like, 60s, 70s. A lot of those guys still put Kareem as the GOAT. Some may even say
yeah.
Wilt. You know, a lot of those guys don't want to give LeBron yeah. his credit. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, I'm also, like, if somebody asked me right now, name my top 10 favorite media people, I'm on with you guys, so I name you two,
yeah.
so now I'm down to 8.
There we go.
I have to mention Scalabrini because I'm on the show with him, so
yeah.
now I'm down to 7. But I'm going to try to be respectful all the way down, and what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to be left off the list, and they're going to say, hey, you know, they're going to call me a nasty name and say,
yeah.
why'd you leave him off the list? So I get it. It's hard to come. Hey, how hard is it to come up with 4 when they talk about Mount Rushmore?
That's true.
That's the hardest thing to do.
Difficult.
Wilt, Kareem,
yeah. Yeah.
Bill Russell, LeBron, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird. Come on, man. That's a harder one.
True.
10, you give yourself a little leeway. 4 is
tough.
Four Especially is since tough. You do play with 5 in the NBA. It really should. The
should
NBA
five.
Mount Rushmore should be 5 guys.
Yeah.
Because it is a 5-man game.
But would it be with the new NBA voting rules for All-Star where you can't, where it's free-for-all, you can have like 5 point guards now and no center?
Well,
yeah.
But you know what, though? With Jokic and Embiid, I think they both would have made it. Last
mm-hmm.
year. The bigger thing is the postseason awards, because for the longest time, I never voted anybody for MVP if they didn't play in at least 70 games.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was 68, whatever I came up with. But this year, I think Embiid was at 68. He played more, or maybe Jokic played more games. But
Probably.
None of the top 3 guys played 70 games.
Wow.
Which is, and now you know that's going to be the case, because the number is going to be at 65. And then there are some cases where if it's a big injury that a guy had, you could still, in theory, be eligible. I don't, you know, it's hard to believe, like, how many games guys missed, but let's face it, it's all about the playoffs now. Milwaukee had the great regular season. Look what happened to them in the playoffs. So they're not supposed to go for it during the regular season? For what? What did being the number one seed get them? It got them a bad game against Miami, because Miami should have been the 7th seed.
Right.
They lose that game, the home game, and they end up beating
Chicago,
and they're the 8th seed. They were a 7th seed. They should have played Boston in the first round, not Milwaukee.
Yeah, true indeed, man. Well, great stuff, Frank. Definitely appreciate you giving us the time. We had an excellent show today. And for you guys in the chat, man, be sure to tap in with Frank and our guy, Brian Scalabrini, on the starting lineup, SiriusXM Channel 86 on NBA Radio from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Frank, you doing ESPN at all this week? What else are you doing this week?
I got a Thursday I'll be on.
Okay.
Check your local listings, as they say. Then we're off. The shows are off for like 3 weeks because of the 4 greatest words in sports.
Yeah.
Little League World
Series. Little League
Series.
World Series,
so
man.
I get like a little break here.
There you go, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy the rest of the summer, the dog days of summer, as
Thanks.
They say.
You
but,
too, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate the time, man. That was Frank Isola, ladies and gentlemen. Hit that like button. Hit that thumbs up button for you boys. Share this video, man, on the NBA reports. Got some good Knicks stories in there as well, man. So we definitely
mm-hmm.
appreciate Frank for his time. Remember that this show is available in audio podcast format. No reason to miss it. Catch it on all of the major podcast platforms. And, yeah, man, excellent show. Once again, happy birthday to the Rhyme Animal, Chuck D, man, 63 years young today and still vibrant, still doing it and still representing the culture well as we celebrate 50 years of hip-hop excellence. And shout out to the Rhyme Animal, Chuck D, for being a trailblazer for us, man, and a big-time supporter in the Moz chat, as he calls it, man. So great show. We'll catch up with you guys later on this week, man. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Tap in with us, man. NBA Report, CB Franchise. We out of here. Peace. All right. I don't think we have any calls, do we? Hope I didn't miss anything.
Good shit, bro. That was awesome.
Let's see. Yeah, that was a good show, bro.